I think that brand is the most misunderstood and most desired thing in the world.
What is going on? Welcome back to the Wild Business Growth Podcast. This, I just spit into the microphone. This is your place to hear from a new entrepreneur every single Wednesday morning who's spitting everywhere and also turning wild ideas into wild growth. I'm your host, Max Brandstetter, founder and podcast producer at Max Podcasting, and you can email me at max@maxpodcasting.com to save time with your high-quality podcast. This is episode 100 and Joe Thomas, and today's guest is Jennifer Kemp. Jennifer, aka Jen, is a top brand strategist and brand futurist who's helped the brands of Oprah Winfrey Network, Steve Harvey, Verizon, Oracle, Microsoft, just a couple of names you might have heard of. And in this episode, we dive into her brand framework that helps you get seen, get heard, and get paid. And we get pretty wild. I know it's a little surprising to get wild on this podcast, but there is some talk about things in the bathroom, some talk about underwear. And if you are listening with your kids, you might want to skip this one, or at least skip this one after the first 15 minutes or so, because we talk about a story about Mr. Santa Claus, which might not bode too well with your children, if you catch my drift. Wink, wink. It is Jennifer Kemp Possible. Enjoy the show. Alrighty, we are here with Jennifer. Don't call me Jen Kemp. See, I had to mess with you on the intro, Jennifer.
Perfect. But
Jennifer Kemp, the branding futurist, branding extraordinaire, work with some of the coolest brands and people out there, and so many clever creative ideas. Jennifer, thank you so much for making the time today. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Max. I'm so happy to be here.
Of course. So we're going to get to your motto and what you're all about of how to get seen, get heard, get paid, which I think sounds good for most people. But before that, you've managed to work with and help out the brands of names like Oprah Winfrey, Steve Harvey, and brands like Verizon, Microsoft, Oracle. How do you get yourself to even be in the realm of consideration for working with these huge celebrity stars and massive global brands in the first place?
Yeah, great question. I'd want to say it's by accident, but I think accidents are really just strategic intention, and you're in the right place at the right time. But one of the things I like to say, Max, is I'm not a spring chicken. I'm a seasoned chicken. And because I'm a seasoned chicken, you know, I spent over a decade in the corporate world first and started my career as a junior copywriter at the biggest advertising agency in the world, which is Ogilvy, and left my VP of marketing position to start my own consulting business originally. I had a lot of, I'd call it like track record and obviously the resume coming out of corporate. And I think that when you're working with other big companies, they like, well, at the time they'd like to see that. Remember, I'm a seasoned chicken. Now, if you have a good social media following and you're an influencer, it's actually a lot easier than it was just 10 years ago, you know, to answer your question. But then when I started my company in 2006, which is actually interesting because I didn't start a consulting company first. You'd be interested to hear I actually started an underwear company, but it has
to do. Of course. Everybody does that, right?
Right. Everybody like, yeah, I go from like a VP marketing position to selling panties and bras. That's pretty interesting.
It's the natural progression.
Exactly. I did that. And then that was 2006. And those 2 years were the best years of my life. I'm kind of one of those outlier types that was able to build a really big company out of the gate, but it's because of my brand background. I know how to bring products to market, and my gift, people like to say about me, Max, is that I can smell the money. So like, I know where the money is and I know how to sniff it out. So I have a super sniffer. And because of that, I was able to create that really incredible company to over $10 million in sales in 18 months selling underwear. But then the recession came in 2008 and it was a blow because I was in the two industries that absolutely sucked the most in small business at the time, which was retail and real estate. And I was over leveraged. And although I was really smart at the front end, you know, the marketing, the building the brand, the advertising, what I wasn't as equipped with back then was the back end, which is like operations, logistics, cash flow, those things that if you're a creative strategist, not as fun, but super necessary. And so I wasn't able to survive the recession. And that was a big blow to not just my ego, but to my entire life. Like it blew up in 2008. And I, after 6 months of feeling like literally shit, I tell people all the time, and if you knew me, you would not believe this, but I spent 6 months because I became functionally homeless. I had to move into my grandmother's house in the country. So even though, thank God I had her and she let me live with her, I subsisted on Newport cigarettes and Japanese green tea. And I like withered away. People thought I was a meth. Like literally they were like, oh my gosh, she's losing her mind. And I guess I did lose my mind a bit because my confidence had gotten mega shaken and I was lost and thought, oh my gosh, you know, do I need to go back and get my job? Which I really didn't want to do because I had gotten that taste of creative freedom. And at the same time, I needed to be responsible because I had two young children at the time. So anyway, I remember I decided one day I was sick of like just sitting on the porch doing nothing and feeling like sucky about myself. And I realized that the best way for me to pivot would be to go back to my roots, but still create, to still maintain autonomy over my life. And what that looked like is I went back to my old boss at Verizon because I had left Verizon as a VP of marketing of the West Coast. And I said, I'd like to come back. And he was thrilled. I said, but I don't want to be an employee. I want to be a consultant. And anybody listening who knows about the corporate world or traditional jobs, consultants always get respected and paid better than the employees do, right? But they're basically doing the same job. And I realized I need to shift the perception of me and how I operated. And that's kind of the origin story of how I was able to then make Verizon, instead of my employer, my first big client. And that particular contract has been worth millions of dollars to my company. But then once you're good in one place, then you meet other executives and whatnot. And that led to like Oracle, Microsoft, because that's all in the kind of the high tech area. And then 8 years ago, I've always invested in my personal and leadership development, Max. And so I've always had somebody, mentors, coaches, et cetera. And I had a mentor and she was like, you know, entrepreneurs really need you because we're always getting, you know, hyped up that like we need to learn direct marketing and we should create marketing campaigns, but they don't work. And we're spending thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, who are these jokers? Let me see who's like taking your money. And so she begged me to help her company. And I said, no, I don't work with entrepreneurs. I only work with corporate. And she said, you know, if you help me, I have access to a lot of people and people like Oprah and Steve Harvey. And so I had no intention, Max, of falling into what I do now to help those type of celebrity influencers. But that's kind of the long story behind your short question.
I'm all about short questions and long answers, but it was a long, beautiful answer. But that is amazing. One, on the business front, business client front, global corporation client front, that you really reverse engineered it. I've never heard of anybody who basically applied or has a history of working with somewhere and then bam, that company turns into their client instead. That is an incredible way to get your foot in the door. Probably a long-term approach, but it is a way to get your foot in the door. And then on the celebrity side, it just goes back to people and who you know and who knows who. And if you find somebody who's connected to some huge names like that, and obviously you give a big enough impression or enough that they're craving your business, that's a pretty good friend to have, I think, in the space you're in.
Absolutely. I always say that I'm the mastermind and strategist behind many of the brands, and especially now in today's world, right? Influencer marketing and all of that. They need somebody to help them architect what's next. And a lot of times they're busy doing what they do, but they don't know how to monetize that. They don't know how to turn that into real income, into, they know how to get seen and heard, right, Max? But they don't know how to get paid. So there's a lot of celebrities and Instagram influencers, they're all broke, like straight up. They don't have any money, but they spend all their money on taking photography. And that's cool. Like, I don't judge that part. But what our company does is we put the whole thing together, because I believe that you have to build a brand and a business at the same time. Remember I said my biggest mistake in 2008 was that I knew the brand, but the business side, that ops side, that back end piece was not my gift. And I knew I need to partner to put that together, because that's ultimately what grows and scales a company and makes it legendary. And so, because people, how they interact with your brand is not just through your messaging, although that's what lures them in, what brings them in. But once they're in, and if your product is shit and your customer service sucks and like everything feels broken, that hurts the reputation, which is your brand. And so we really specialize in making sure that the brand is whole, which means that it has a business engine under it.
So let's get to the whole brand, sponsored by Raisin Bran. No, I'm just kidding. But how to get seen, heard, and paid. Really, what you specialize in. You hear this word brand all the time. I get it frequently. People think my last name is Brandstetter, so I think I hear it even more so. And I used to work in brand management. So you are the creator of the Master Brand Method, Master Brand Institute. You know brand left, right, up, down, inside out, and the upside down and Stranger Things. For you, what does it mean to have and build a brand?
I think that brand is the most misunderstood and most desired thing in the world for anybody who's wants to make a big idea shine, right? So from a consumer's perspective, the definition of a brand is something that they trust, something, whether it's a product, a company, a person, because there's three types of brands. There's company brands, personal brands, and offer brands. And in today's marketplace and going forward, all three of them are really important. What's interesting is people forget that it's the personal brand, like the Steve Jobs or the Sarah Blakely's or the Kendra Scott's or whoever has built a company around them, Kate Spade, you know, whoever. It started with their personal brand too. So it's not like it's some new social media thing, right? When you think of a brand, you think of the person who founded it, generally speaking. Now, there are some brands that you don't, for example, well, that's not true. Like, we were just talking about Raisin Bran, you know, like Kellogg's, he was
that's
a dude.
That's just me being corny.
Right? But he's a real man. Like Kellogg's, right. Hershey, they were all real people, right? And they put their name, Walmart is Sam Walton, you know, brands are basically products, companies, or people, or all of the above that people trust to give their time, energy, and money to. That's what a brand is. And on the business side, the brand is its biggest insurance, right? It's its greatest asset. So if you're a business person or you own a business or you work for a company, the brand is, it's like the skin of a company, you know, it's its identity, it's its essence, it's the way it communicates, it's the quality of its products. And so all brand basically is making sure that you don't screw up your reputation in the consumer's eyes. And I call the brand brand strategy is about, it's an ecosystem, Max. So basically people think, oh, marketing and branding are kind of in the same family. They actually are not. Okay. Brand is the mama bear, and marketing, sales, operations, finance, customer service, those are basically the baby bears. They are they contribute to the brand equity and value. And so, you know, marketing helps you get brand awareness. It's actually, marketing is not for sales. A lot of people get that messed up too. Marketing's job is to create attention, acquisition, and trust. Sales is obvious. It's to get them to pay you for whatever it is. Operations is making sure that you don't run out of money so you can keep serving your audience. And finance is really telling you where you should reinvest your cash flow. And so I think that a lot of companies understood this, like bigger companies understand this, Max, but smaller companies, remember my friend who became my mentor, who asked me to come into this world, she was like, nobody has ever explained it like that. Like I never understood why it was matter. Cause in the small business space, a lot of people just think it's a logo and, you know, your website, which those are components of your brand, but they don't mean shit to anybody unless there's something underneath it that people identify and resonate with. Then the visuals become important.
I'm digging these analogies, by the way. We got Mama Bear, we got the kids, Bernstein Bears, all sorts of bears.
Hey, I was like a Bernstein Bear, like Freakazoid when I was little. So,
yeah. And you pronounce it better than me. It's one of those, you know, it's famous for people spelling it wrong, but I guess now it's going to be very extremely famous for people pronouncing it wrong as well. But I like how you broke down the brand and different kind of key essentials of a business, big or small. Let's focus on branding for small business for a bit. What are the best things that you can do these days to strengthen your brand as a small business owner?
Well, I think that the most, so not just the best, but the most important is that people think it's about, as I said, marketing and your product. And it is about marketing and your product, absolutely. But what's even more important is your messaging of your marketing and your product. Because I like to say marketing is actually quite dumb. Marketing is not strategic, okay? It's a bunch of machines that work on your behalf. You have to actually install messaging into marketing for it to actually pay off and work, right? So messaging is the number one thing that I think people do not focus on in small business. They focus on the systems, like, oh, which funnel system should I have? What CRM system should I have? They focus on storytelling, which is part of the messaging. That's great, but they don't know how to integrate that. So I would say that messaging, and I tell this to everybody, that is the number one thing, because messaging will also signal, like, it's like, I'm big into superheroes, Max. I basically into like a lot of things, but I always say like your brand is your bat signal. It's like when you put up your bat signal, do people recognize that you're there to help them?
Where's that from? I haven't heard of that. No, I'm just kidding. You probably were like about to sign off right then.
I was like, bro, you don't know Batman? We can't be friends.
No, I was Batman probably age 4 or 5 for Halloween, and probably every year before that too.
Right. He's the man. He doesn't even have any superpowers and he knows how to kick everyone's ass. I love it. So, you know, for small business, it's about messaging, and specifically around messaging. In, as you mentioned, I've created a process called the Master Brand Method. There are 6 things that set you apart, and it's about differentiation, because there are other people doing what you do. There's really no such thing as new ideas. There's innovations around ideas, but you know, there are other people selling luggage. There are other people selling marketing services. There are other people selling accounting services, right?
Underwear. Yeah.
Underwear. Yeah. Panties and bras, you know? And what the advantage a small business has is in the area of their messaging. So I'll share what those 6 things are that set you apart. So the first is what your brand archetype is. And this comes from Carl Jung. I learned about it when I was 22 years old, working at Ogilvy. And I realized that most advertising campaigns use brand archetypal psychology to build their campaigns around. And so this is one thing small business owners don't do well enough. And it's basically getting to the heart of, what is your brand voice? What is the language that you speak? What are the things that you're known for? And so it's a long description. I could go into it, it would take us an hour, but I can just say that Carl Jung created this idea of archetypes, which are characters in the story, right? And that people resonate with characters. And so if you can identify the character of your business and write from that character's voice, for example, Batman, let's say Batman's the character that you base your brand voice around, then you just speak like Batman, you know, you got to speak like him, you know, and that's one thing. In fact, it blew my mind, because when I was 22 years old working at Ogilvy, they had a $1 billion budget, Max, for marketing Coca-Cola. $1 billion. And this was a long ass time ago. Okay.
That's a lot of Coca-Cola.
I mean, for reals, you know, and I always tell people Coca-Cola is like the ultimate master brand, because it still has the most brand equity of any other brand in the world. Because you can get Coca-Cola to Timbuktu, even if you can't get Wi-Fi. You can get it on a Sherpa's back or a goat's back and get it up the mountain, okay? So, and sugar's addictive. So all of those things. And also there's mystery, right, behind Coke, because it has the secret recipe, right? And so these are all archetypes of Coca-Cola. But this really funny story is they were battling, like, how can Coca-Cola and Pepsi, like, how can we continue to beat Pepsi? And it was so fascinating, me being a young, I wasn't even really writing, Max. They said, called me a copywriter. But what I really did is get coffee for all the account executives.
You're a coffee writer.
I was a coffee writer. Yes, literally writing in my hands as I passed it off. And they would literally take on the archetype of Pepsi. And Pepsi's archetype is the ruler. And Coca-Cola's archetype is the muse. And what I mean by that is the muse archetype is all about nostalgia. It's all about childhood memories. It's about hearkening to a time when things were simpler. And then the ruler archetype is about celebrity. It's about CEO. It's about a little bit more splash, more look at me, a little bit more narcissist, if you will. And if you look at Pepsi and Coca-Cola over the years, they have stayed true to their archetypes. Okay. Pepsi always has celebrities in their advertising campaigns. In fact, the only city that Pepsi is dominant is Las Vegas. Why? Because it's like ruler land. In fact, every time I go to Vegas, I'm pissed off because I can't get a Coca-Cola anywhere and I hate Pepsi. So there's that part.
There goes our sponsorship. Thank you very much.
Sorry. Well, they won't like me, but they'll like you, Max, because you're defending them right now. So
I appreciate it. I play great defense.
Coca-Cola, on the other hand, being a muse brand or muse archetype, a lot of people don't know this. I'm about to, everybody, if you have kids around you, put on your headphones as you listen to this podcast, because I'm about to ruin your children's lives. But Coca-Cola invented Santa Claus. Okay. They knew that they needed something to make it more mainstream out of Christianity. So Christmas is about Jesus Christ and all that. And so they realized, who could we also bring into the story to make everybody subconsciously want Coca-Cola? Well, look, Santa Claus is a white man with a red suit, and he's very chubby because he eats a lot of sugar. Okay. They created Santa Claus. And that's why they dominate the world. Okay. And that's about nostalgia and childhood, right?
I'm a little rattled because you spoiled what I always believe. I'm sorry, Max. No, that's amazing. And everybody knows those commercials too.
Yes. They know the polar bears, which I think is hilarious.
I was just about to say that. Jeez, you must have worked with the brand or something.
I know, right? I mean, but the polar bears, I laugh about it because they're super cute, right? And they're going extinct. But what other people don't realize is polar bears are the most vicious bears of all the bears in the bear family. Like, literally, they'll eat humans. And it's hilarious that Coca-Cola does not give a fuck. They're like, they're cute. They're always on the world, you know, the wild, or what is it? World Wildlife Fund. And so they chose a white animal and they put red scarves on them. Okay. This is the power of archetypes. And I tell people all the time, if you really understood that in small business, you would be a force. But a lot of times we're trying to have a million different identities and we don't know how to apply that to our small business. And if you just do that, that's going to make you different and you'll look really cool, right? If you understand this psychology, because branding is just psychology, really, you know?
It is. You are like the queen of cutting through the brand bullshit and seeing the real interest behind these. So we don't have enough time to run through the remaining five in detail, but would you be willing to share just kind of like one-liners or quick synopsis on each of them? Because I'd love to kind of complete the picture here.
Yeah. So the next is your use case, we call it, or your unique solution expertise, which basically is what absolutely makes you different. What makes your product or your service different, truly? And usually you have some type of framework around that. So that's one piece. The next is what we call the experience story sequence, or TESS for short. I call it an analog technology that installs influence into your audience. And that basically just means that you need to create or know what your authority and your approachability stories are for your brand, your products, and or your personal brand. The fourth thing is you need to know where the money is, which we call your rich niche, right? You need to know, if you want to be a rich bitch, you need to know your rich niche, okay? You need to know where the money is. The fifth thing is that you need to know why they're coming. So we call that a diagnostic. So you need to have a diagnostic inside of your brand that lets people know where they fit into your brand for your business. So meaning like, let's say we're talking about entrepreneurs, right? Let's say they're coming to work in my company. We need to know whether you're what we call a stage one business or a stage three business or stage two business. And that's based on how much income you're making, how many people know you. So brands benefit from knowing diagnostically where their ideal clients that are in that rich niche are. And finally, the main thing is like, obviously, the visuals. So the visual narrative of how people recognize the brand.
I bet you can run through that in your sleep blindfolded. Out of all those elements, what is the most like make or break thing that if you do this right, it can really reflect well on your business? But if you botch this, it's kind of a deal breaker there.
I will say this. I think it's so important that your product or service actually can deliver the promise. Because ultimately, you know, people will say, sell before you finish it. And that's true. You should sell things because you need to be testing your ideas in the real world. You can't just test them in a lab or in your brain. So that's true, but you have to be willing to screw it up a lot so that you can get to a place where your product is excellent. Not perfect, but excellent, right?
Excellent. Yeah. Shout out Wayne's World.
Yeah. Excellent. You know, absolutely. I think that that's the main thing. And I think now when you look at legendary brands, you know, people who've stuck around and been in our mind's eye, their products continue to get better, or unfortunately, they have so much market share that they can make crappy products like what Apple's doing right now. I love Apple. I actually like Steve Jobs a lot. That's kind of controversial, but at least he knew what he wanted. You know, I think that I can respect that Steve knew what he wanted. And now they become a commodity business, it feels like. Like they're just trying to revenue every little piece of thing. And I feel like Steve Jobs is like rolling over in his grave going, did you put a fucking toggle on my iPhone 10? You know.
That damn toggle again.
Right. And so I think Samsung has a huge advantage right now. Just give it time and they will eclipse Apple. Because
interesting.
They, in fact, like when you ask, what do people need to be thinking about, the brand is the long game. The brand should outlive you, right? The brand should be in your mind's eye, of your kid's eye, your grandkid's eye, you know? And it's important who's running the company. And you should always have a visionary running the company, not what I call an operator. And right now, Apple has an operator that's running the company in Tim Cook. You know, he was the COO guy. And ops people are not creative. They're not supposed to be. They're supposed to make sure the business doesn't fall apart. But without that injection of vision and creativity, a brand can die. It happened for to Steve Jobs, right? When, you know, it was dying on because they hired the head of Pepsi to run the company because that was a mistake. Don't ever hire anybody from Pepsi to run your company.
You have so many. It sounds like you have so many brands that are like BFS with you, and so many brands that probably are. We'll just call them not BFS with you.
Well, I'll just tell you that, like, if they could hire me, I don't know if I'd do it, but and that whole thing, it's so funny. You're probably wondering, why do I hate Pepsi? I don't hate Pepsi. It's just that my dad really loved Coca-Cola. And I think
there
that back to brands also hearken memories for you in the consumer's mind. And for me, my dad told me Pepsi sucks, Coke is great. And so that's always stuck with me. It doesn't matter if even Pepsi tastes better. I am set on it. And so that's also because of the product, right? So if your product is great to people who influence you, that's really important to figure out when you're building your business and brand.
It's also really important to figure out what marketing tools or levers or whatever jargon, you know, insert jargon blank here, you want to implement into your brand to really bring that brand to life. And podcasting, of course, is one of them. And I happen to be just a little bit passionate about podcasting. But if you're thinking about having a podcast, adding it to your repertoire for your brand, but you're not quite sure how to do it, or maybe you thought about it, but you just haven't gotten quite over the hump because it's so time consuming. You already got so much going on. Hit me up. Email me at max@maxpodcasting.com. I will help you bring that lever, tool, jargon device to life. Help you add that audio dimension to your brand, which is so impactful. Email me at max@maxpodcasting.com. Now, it's going to get a little shitty from here on out, so remember to courtesy flush. So let's switch gears a little bit. Let's take this interview to the shitter and talk about a fan favorite segment called the Wild Business Shoutout of the Week.
The Wild Business Shoutout of the Week!
Yeah.
Wild Business Shoutout of the Week. This is where we talk about a brand, a creative marketing campaign, something that broke through the clutter, caught our attention, and is memorable. And Squatty Potty, anybody who knows it probably loves it because it's such a cool, unique brand and amazing marketing and advertising. What stood out to you about Squatty Potty?
It's just genius, right? Because everybody poops. That's the bottom line. So the market, we talk about rich niche, they can get everybody because that's one thing that all humans have in common. We all poop, right? So first of all, it's a great name. Let's face it. It rhymes, right? But if you look at their ads campaigns, they're so provocative and funny as hell. And I think that brands have to be more entertaining now because of social media. And Squatty Potty has been doing it since they got big. And so their advertising, their use of their unicorn mascot on some of their ads and how it's like this magical rainbow colored poop that comes out of the unicorn is just all super funny. And I think that it's cutting through what used to be something like you would be ashamed to talk about, let's say, like, you know, using the bathroom used to be kind of shameful. And now, you know, it's not. I'd actually argue that even Charmin in a way broke through that with the bears that poop and then have the toilet paper on their ass.
Yeah. Like, there's a lot of cutting through in a lot of different ways.
Through. Yes.
I mean, if it's coming out rainbow, then you're right. on a different level.
Correct. So I think that's a great example. And I think that small businesses can learn a lot by studying campaigns from those type of businesses to see how they can be original and unique and speak to the masses in a funny way.
I'm totally with you. It's so funny you started out with everybody poops because it's like, it sounds hilarious, but it's true. I mean, I know there's like kids books about that, but like, it's just one of those things, like there's kind of that taboo part of discussion and just things in life that literally everybody knows about so well. Well, maybe not so well. Everybody knows about, but vast majority of the time you're not talking about it unless, you know, you come from a family like I do where that's very, you know, open talking about stuff like that and has fun with it. But like, it takes a really clever creative approach and comedic approach to break through like that, to cut through once again and to create an ad and, you know, series of ads that makes people feel comfortable talking about it. And I'm sure that those initial ads especially just went totally viral as far as people telling their friends about it. And it kind of opens up a level of discussion that probably many people weren't having before.
Yep. And it makes it fun to be like, did you get a Squatty Potty? So you've taken right. the taboo. In fact, it's cool to have a Squatty Potty. I have one. You know, I have one. It's ridiculous.
You're cool.
Literally, my husband could totally make a Squatty Potty. He's handy. He can do stuff. And literally when I was going to go buy it at Bed Bath & Beyond, he was like, I can make that. And I was like, no, I need one of these because it has the brand on it. Squatty. I need to get an original Squatty Potty. I can't just have some bench that I'm propping my feet up on in the commode. I need this brand, you know, and that's what they were able to achieve is like, they put out a brand on a freaking bench. It's a plastic bench, Max. It cost them 2 cents to make. You know what I mean? Like, there's a mold. It shoots out these plastic benches. And
you really had to use the term shoots out?
I did. Because I like puns too, Max.
All for it. Well, shit. Let's wrap up with some rapid fire Q&A. You ready for it?
Yep.
All right. No poop questions. I don't think, unless one comes up. But let's get wild. Who's your favorite Peloton instructor?
Oh my God, Robin Arzon, bar none.
Oh yeah, she's amazing.
Cody Rigsby number two, though. I needed to slide in Cody because he's right behind her. Let's just put it that way.
There you go. Shout out Dancing with the Stars. Mm-hmm. I literally learned about an hour before this interview he was on Dancing with the Stars. But shout him out anyway. What is something quirky about your personality that maybe your family or friends or clients, somebody calls you out for, but it's who you are?
Well, I don't know if this is quirky, but my family calls me the nine life girl because I've survived death now 5 times. So I figure I have 4 more chances at it. I've literally fallen out of 3-story building and survived. I got into a car accident that killed 10 people and I was the only one who survived without a scratch. So I don't know. I'm kind of like one of those lucky cats, I guess.
You talk about Batman. That's maybe the most incredible and useful superpower out there. Wow. That's great. That begs another question. How those close calls like that, how has that changed your perspective on life?
You know, it's funny because I'm extremely afraid of heights, I think, as a result of the ways that I've almost died. Well, let's just put it that way.
We'll give you that one.
But it definitely has made me learn to say yes to the right things, I think, and say no to the right things as well. I'm really good at I'm very decisive. I'm okay with making wrong decisions because I feel like it gets me through things faster. I always tell people maybe is the devil, like yes or no, maybe is the devil. And I think it's through those experiences because I did make it. So I might as well go for it, right? So I think that's really helped me in being assertive in the things that I've wanted to achieve.
Maybe. Yeah. I feel like I'm pretty decisive sometimes as well. Well, yeah. Sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. All right. You spend some of your time living in Hawaii. What's your favorite part besides the, of course, natural beauty and weather? What's your favorite part of living in Hawaii?
The favorite part. I would say the mangoes.
Oh.
I mean.
There we go. That's a big mango shout out.
Big time. Best mangoes in the world.
What is your favorite creative hobby or way to unplug?
This is going to be boring, but I love it. I love to read. I'm a bibliophobe. I just love to
read. Wait, bibliophobe? That means scared, doesn't it?
I know. That's why I said I had to change phobophile.
A phobophile. Maybe
yeah.
Both.
Yeah. Well, I'm allergic to people interrupting my reading, if that makes sense.
Oh,
but
sorry.
I love to read, and I love to read everything, fiction, nonfiction, you name it. I'm obsessed with reading, and so. That's kind of boring, but I just got 5 new books in Amazon yesterday and it felt better than sex. Let's just put it that way. I love reading. So good.
What's the one that you're most excited to crack open out of those?
This is going to sound so boring, but it's a book about using data in your storytelling. And I get geeky around that kind of stuff because brands are my business. So that's the book that I want to crack open.
As long as it's not all in like binary computer code. It's probably a little bit more exciting.
I wouldn't know how to do that. Not qualified.
Me neither. What is something surprising about either Oprah or Steve Harvey?
They poop just like everyone else.
Wow. Nicely done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never thought of that until now. There we go. Well, we are, I'm sure they're number one fans of this podcast now, but Jennifer, thank you so much for sharing your method, your ideas, your amazing analogies and storytellies. I just invented something there.
Teletubbies.
Story Teletubbies. Thanks for sharing your Teletubbies. Bathroom stories, non-bathroom stories, underwear stories, and beyond. Just love what you do, love your energy, and love the analogies. Where is the best place for people to connect with you and just partner with you in any way?
The place I like to have conversations is on Instagram. So you can find me at jennifer.chem over there. And then on LinkedIn, you can find me at linkedin.com/JenniferChem.
Perfect. Jennifer Chem, who also goes by Jen, but social is Jennifer. And then last thing here, stage is yours. Final thoughts. It could be a quote, a line, another bibliophile, phobia story, whatever you want. Send us home here.
So one of my favorite quotes that allows me to get through anything. And I tell my clients, whether they're corporate or they're small business or they're celebrity, because as we all poop, right? What makes you decide to launch something new? And should I launch this thing? I get that question a lot. And I like to quote Joan Baez. She's actually a songwriter and a musician. And she says, action is the antidote to despair. So I think that taking action, getting on the field of play, letting people experience your products and services, that's the best way to decide what you're going to do next when you're building a brand.
Only the best from Jen. Jen, thank you so much for sharing your tips, framework, stories inside and outside the bathroom. And thank you, Wild listeners, for tuning in to another episode. If you want to hear more Wild stories like this one, make sure to follow the Wild Business Growth Podcast, if you're not already, on your favorite podcast platform. And tell a friend about the podcast, even if you have already. You can also find us on Good Pods, where there are plenty of good podcasts and fantastic podcast recommendations. And for any help with podcast production, you can learn more at maxpodcasting.com. Until next time, let your business run wild.
Bring on the bongos!